This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. In just about 6 hours, President Donald Trump expects to sit down with North Korea's Kim Jong-un in Singapore. The first 45 minutes of this meeting will be one-on-one, just translators in the room with Trump and Kim. The usual contingent of top-level policy advisors, including National Security Advisor John Bolton, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, and White House Chief of Staff John Kelly will not be in the room for those critical first moments. They'll join the president after the first 45 minutes. However, here is what Pompeo told reporters in Singapore this morning.
Sanctions will remain until North Korea completely and verifiably eliminates its weapons of mass destruction programs. If diplomacy does not move in the right direction, and we are hopeful that it will continue to do so, those measures will increase. President Trump recognizes Chairman Kim's desire for security and is prepared to ensure that a North Korea free of weapons of mass destruction is also a secure North Korea.
Joining me now on the line is Gary Seymour. He's Executive Director for Research at the Belfer Center for Science and International Affairs at Harvard University. He's also former White House Coordinator for Arms Control and Weapons of Mass Destruction. He served in that post in the first Obama administration. Gary Seymour, welcome back to Radio Boston.
Thank you. Good to be with you.
It's great to have you. Also with us via Skype today is Vipin Narang. He's president of he's professor of political science at MIT, specializing in nuclear proliferation and South Asian security. Vipin Narang, welcome to you.
Thank you, Meghna. Great to be here.
So let me just first get a sense from both of you about what you make of these critical first 45 minutes between President Trump and Kim Jong-un that's going to happen with only translators in the room. I mean, Gary, is that bold, risky? What do you think?
Well, it's normal. I mean, that's the kind of behavior you often have in summits, that the leaders will have a private meeting before they open it up to the official meeting with all of the advisors. I think Kim Jong-un's objective has to be to convince Trump that he's serious and sincere about giving up his nuclear weapons, even if he really isn't. He's got to convince Trump that in a process in exchange for peace and prosperity, North Korea is willing to first limit and eventually eliminate its nuclear weapons.
Vipin Narang, I take Gary Seymour's point about this, the one-on-one being normal in a normal summit situation. But on the other hand, Gary, I actually think it was you who a while ago told us, he told us that this isn't exactly a normal summit, right? Because a summit usually happens after months of negotiations between envoys from either side, and that is not what we have in this case. So do you think that there are risks to this first one-on-one meeting of Vipin Narang? That one's for you.
So, I mean, I think the Trump administration has turned this process upside down. In the past, negotiations between the United States and North Korea have been bottom-up. So you've had working-level groups meeting for a long time, and there's never been a U.S. president sitting down with a chairman from North Korea. And so I suspect that the aim of this meeting is to have a top-down process. So I suspect that today in Singapore, the working-level group, Ambassador Sung Kim on our side and his North Korean counterparts, probably hammered out what I expect or suspect is a pretty anodyne joint statement. It's 25 years to the day that there was a 1993 joint declaration between the U.S. and North Korea. And if you look that up, I imagine language is going to be very similar, committing to denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula, a security assurance from the United States. But the meeting, I think, is probably to set the framework and the guidance going forward now for the working level groups on both sides to implement a broad framework for the two sides. And, you know, I think one of Kim Jong-un's objectives was to get the photo op of the handshake with the U.S. president. In a lot of ways, that confers legitimacy on him. And also the fact that he's a de facto nuclear weapons power.
Mm-hmm.
I don't expect that North Korea is going to relinquish its nuclear weapons, but now the process of, you know, at least maybe trying to cap, freeze, declare facilities can move forward.
Right. So to that point, Gary Seymour, I mean, today in Singapore, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo said, you know, he noted the fact, these are his words, that, quote, many presidents previously have signed off on a piece of paper only to find the North Koreans didn't promise what we had. What we thought they had or actually reneged on their promises. And yet Pompeo also points out, as we heard in that tape a moment ago, that the ultimate goal out of these talks is the complete denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula. So, I mean, what kind of immediate steps do you think have to happen in this meeting in order to get us even a little bit towards that?
So I agree with Secretary of State Pompeo that the history of U.S. negotiations with North Korea is a very sad history of cheating and broken promises. I'm not sure it's going to be different this time. I agree with Vipin that North Korea is very unlikely to give up its nuclear weapons, although they might be willing to accept some significant limits,
right,
such as limits on additional production of nuclear weapons or long-range missiles. And the key there is really going to be declaration and verification. So what I would look for very early in any agreement, which may take months or years to negotiate, is that North Korea would be required to take early steps to declare all of its existing stockpile and production facilities subject to international inspection, and then to freeze those facilities. Now, of course, we're going to have to give them something in return, mm-hmm. and the current U.S. negotiating position, which is North Korea satisfies us before they get any sanctions relief, that's just not practical. So somewhere along the way in the negotiations, we're going to have to figure out how to slice and dice sanctions relief and economic assistance in exchange for early, substantial, verified steps from North Korea. If they can come up with an agreement that does that, I think that would be a significant achievement, even if it never ends up in complete elimination.
Vipin Narang, what's your take?
Yeah, no, I agree entirely with Gary. And I think, you know, the one trap we need to avoid, I think, is there's the very public pronouncement of not just complete, verifiable, irreversible. So the original CVID was dismantlement, and it called for unilateral disarmament and dismantlement of the North Korean nuclear program. But the administration's public stance is not only that North Korea needs to eliminate its nuclear weapons program, but its chem, bio, ballistic missile programs. And then Secretary Pompeo has what I call the Pompeo special. He's mishmashed two of these phrases into complete, verifiable, irreversible denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula. Mm-hmm. And by adding those latter qualifiers, it actually could be interpreted by the North as something as extreme as universal disarmament, in the sense that the only way to irreversibly and verifiably completely denuclearize the Korean Peninsula is if the United States and everyone else also gives up its nuclear weapons. I worry this phrase is potentially a trap for the United States going forward, and it's one that hasn't been used before. So we've traded CVID originally as dismantlement, and now combined it with the old phrase denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula into a single, long and broad concept that actually could impose extreme conditions on the United States as well. And I think we have to be very careful going forward about how the North interprets the language out of any joint statement tomorrow to their advantage.
Interesting. So, Gary Seymour, let me ask you, in the Los Angeles Times, Sumi Terry of the Center for Strategic and International Studies and Bruce Klinger of the Heritage Foundation essentially point out that they believe what the Trump administration is trying to achieve with North Korea is a deal that would actually have to be tougher and more comprehensive than the Iran deal, which the United States just pulled out of. So, I mean, given that the president called the Iran deal one of the worst deals that the United States has ever entered in the history of the nation, what does that make you think about the concessions that the Trump administration is willing to make regarding North Korea?
So I think a big difference between North Korea and Iran is that North Korea will agree on paper to an end process that is complete denuclearization, including their fuel cycle facilities. They'll never actually do it, but they will agree to it on paper. The Iranians were not willing to agree, even in theory, that they would give up all of their facilities that could potentially produce fissile material. So they insisted on sunset clauses and retaining those capabilities, which they claim are for civilian purposes. So in one respect, you might get a deal on paper with North Korea that looks better than the Iran deal. I think where the real challenge will be getting any kind of an inspection regime that's even close to the Iranian inspection regime. The North Koreans have never been willing to allow any inspection outside of their declared nuclear facilities at Yongbyon. So, and of course, the Iran deal allows for inspection outside of declared facilities. That's going to be an amazing challenge. And if you throw in missiles and chemical and bio, you've just made the inspection and verification challenge many times more difficult.
Right. Vipin Naran, we've just got a minute to go here. So the last question goes to you. I mean, I just want to underscore once again that this meeting basically, as both of you have said, turns on its head decades of U.S. foreign policy and posture towards any kind of summit with a North Korean leader. So who knows what's going to happen? But President Trump is heading into this meeting after essentially having agreed to a communique out of the G7 and then deciding to disagree with it on the plane to Singapore. Could that sort of mercurial nature of the American president have any impact on how the North Koreans look at what they can get out of this first meeting?
Well, I think that that behavior kind of underscores the fundamental reason why North Korea will never give up its nuclear weapons. I mean, the reason why the Libya model created an aneurysm in North Korea is, when John Bolton insisted on North Korea giving up its nuclear weapons as a Libya model, North Korea looks at the Libya model not as 2003, but as 2011, when the United States then led, the invasion and then the brutal killing of Gaddafi. And so the notion that, there can be any security guarantee that is indefinitely credible that would cause North Korea to give up its nuclear weapons, I think, our own behavior in the past betrays that. And then, and as you said, as he left the G7, the president apparently had agreed to the communique before he left and then changed his mind based on a press conference by Prime Minister Trudeau. And so all of that underscores the fact that, security assurances can have expiration dates, but nuclear weapons, at least as far as the North Koreans are concerned, offer lifetime insurance.
Well, Vipin Naran is professor of political science at MIT. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Magna. Thank you, Gary.
And Gary Seymour, executive director of research at the Belfer Center for Science and International Studies at Harvard. Gary Seymour, thank you as well.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Well, Cambridge's own comedy phenom Mindy Kaling delivered the commencement speech at Dartmouth College on Sunday. Kaling has starred in many beloved TV comedies such as The Office, The Mindy Project, and most recently on the big screen in Ocean's 8. Now, while the 2001 Dartmouth alumna earned some big laughs from the crowd, she also touched on serious issues such as the Me Too movement and her view of President Donald Trump. But between jokes, she offered the graduates her secret to success and some timely advice.
You're graduating into a world where it seems like everything is falling apart. Trust in institutions are at a record low. The truth doesn't seem to matter anymore. And for all I know, the president just tweeted us into a war with Wakanda, a country that doesn't exist. So, class of 2018, you are entering a world that we have toppled like a Jenga tower, and we are relying on you to rebuild it. But how can you do that with the knowledge that things are so unstable out there? I'll tell you my secret, the one thing that has kept me going through the years, my superpower, delusion.
Well, that was Kaling's major theme. Call it the power of positive delusion. Be delusional enough to believe that you can do whatever you set your mind to, she said, no matter what anyone else says.
I was not someone who should have the life I have now, and yet I do. I was sitting in the chair you are literally sitting in right now, and I just whispered, "Why not me?" And I kept whispering it for 17 years. And here I am, someone that this school deemed worthy enough to speak to you at your commencement. Don't let anyone tell you that you can't do something, but especially not yourself. Go conquer the world. Just remember this. Why not you? You made it this far.
Mindy Kaling speaking at the commencement exercises at Dartmouth College yesterday. We'll be back. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.